shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to not just another episode of Kill Shuffle, but episode 100 of Kill Shuffle. I'm Donald.
I'm Dill.
And yes, yes, you join us on a bright, sunny March, as we say April, March. Time is not going that fast, although it is flying. March morning, as we celebrate 100 episodes of the podcast by doing what, Dylan?
Oh, I don't know, just a casual... Another episode. Who cares? Really?
Another episode. I had best laid plans. You're gonna get a new theme tune. We were gonna do an extravaganza, but life gets in the way. So yeah, you know what it's we're like, gonna do?
I don't know. Call it season two.
Call it season two. Don't call it. Don't call it. Whatever you do, don't call it a comeback. No, but all seriousness, you know, this is what we like to do. We just like to talk about music. That's the fun that I get out of it. Is listening back through the records that came out the last couple of weeks and some classics and just talking about them. So I kind of figured, what would be more in the tradition of Kill Shuffle for episode 100 than just to talk about some albums? And the albums we're talking about this week come from Zachary Garen, Eisbrecher, really from and a look back at Def Leppard's seminal 1987 release, Hysteria. That's pretty special for you, right, Dylan?
It is. Yeah. There's a history behind that.
Oh yeah, so there you go. That's what makes it special. But no, it wouldn't be a landmark milestone episode if we didn't wax historical a little bit. And I've done some sums. I think over the last, so it's not quite. It'll be 4 years on the 2nd of May, which is fast approaching. So maybe I can atone for my sins then, in terms of refreshing the show, but. So in the last 100 episodes, I've kind of approximated that we've covered about 450 to 500 releases, which is...
That's not including, like, releases on the fringe that we may have done, stuff that we cancelled, probably more.
Yeah, there's stuff that does fly under the radar too. So, yeah, 450 to 500 is ballpark. And that would be about 300 hours of music that we've reviewed. So multiply that out by sort of five or six. It's quite a body of work, really. And, you know, I have to say, even though we may not be rich and famous, I do feel culturally quite rich, actually, to have a grasp of that sort of crop of 450, 500 records. I really do feel like...
Fun thing to be aware of that no one usually kind of opens to.
Yeah, I think it takes a while. I think it's something to be proud of for sure. Looking back at our first episode, Dill, do you remember what we covered? It was called
Vukovi.
Vukovi, well done. I was going to give you a clue by giving you the episode title, but you've already nailed.
Fantastic Planet was
Fantastic Planet.
You know why I know this? It's because it's the only video I put up on YouTube of our stuff.
Oh,
it's on my profile. Yeah. It was like episode one. I did like a video for it and uploaded.
I'm trying to even remember. Have I seen that? I'm sure I have. That is a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Okay. Gorilla's new album at the time, which was Humans. I just noticed that I actually made a huge, good Lord, a big spelling mistake in the notes for that show. Actually, I spelled Gorillaz Gorillaz, which is just not even remotely how you spell the band name. And then finally, You Are We by While She Sleeps, which I think has proven to be a bit of a modern classic.
Wow. Yeah. What? It's been a bit. Third album coming up soon.
I know. We're going to be covering While She Sleeps again in a couple of weeks, and needless to say, we've failure has rarely left our regular rotation, whether it's new albums or EPs or whatever from Ken Andrews and the gang. And then Vukovi, you know, we really liked that new album last year, and Gorillaz have been back at least once on the show.
Times.
So it was kind of a nice jumping off point in terms of what we were going to do in future. So I just think the logo is way better now.
For sure.
If I do say so myself. So fun times. Always nice to take a trip down memory lane, but we do have business to attend to. And the first album of the week is a little bit of a birthday surprise from Zachary Garen of Strawberry Girls fame. I like this tradition, Dill. Did you know this? He's releasing solo albums on his birthday now.
That's a great way to do it. Instead of feeling existential dread, you're excited.
Yeah, and I you have to, your heart does have to go out to Zach, because, you know, this is his second, well, actually America was pretty late to the lockdown. I was gonna say his birthday is the 14th of March, so I was gonna say this is his second lockdown birthday album, but I think probably the last one was likely completed pre-lockdown, but yeah, it was that wild week. So I actually have to say that first album won did give me quite a lift in that very chaotic week, and we both really liked it, huh?
Oh, for sure. Always. It's hard not to, really, with what we like, naturally.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be impossible, like, spoilers, but it would be very difficult not to like a new project from Zachary Garin. And if this becomes an annual tradition, happy birthday to both you and us, Zach, because two is excellent. In fact, I would go as far as to say it's even a step up from the first one.
For sure. Very experimental with song structure, or just album length structure, right? It's an odd one, but it feels full. It's just very quick. It's kind of a flash at points.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. I mean, he packs so much in. There's loads of what we kind of know to be the Strawberry Girls sound, and also Zach would have previously played in Dance Gavin Dance. And I definitely hear, you know, there's that kind of almost sort of Latin tinged, very danceable, mathy instrumental rock on this. Uh-huh. But he also veers into more sort of early Anso Watching From Afar territory a couple times on tracks like Twilight and Icicle Eyelash. There's some kind of there's like Adebisi Shank levels of weirdness from time to time, and then it can get like more sort of traditional post-hardcore or almost sort of stonery in the way that the riffs are constructed. So there's just loads and loads of variety, and I think the great thing about listening to when Zach writes music is it never feels instrumental. I never think about it as being instrumental rock in any way or post-rock. It's just songs where the singer happens to be a guitar.
It really holds the melody with the groove. Some memorable riffs and licks just off the bat. I mean, like fucking Robo Trippin', the kind of Daft Punk homage. It kind of has an effect that sounds like what's the one on Human Rock. After All? Yes, but there's Rock. Another effect they use. It's not the usual one, but you know where the connection lies, and it's gorgeous, and it just packs a punch, right?
Yeah, and you're getting towards the end of the record there, and I was thinking, are we gonna get a woo? Yeah. And then we get a woo, and I was like, okay, cool, because you gotta have one in there somewhere.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of CKY a bit as well.
Oh,
a bit of an
Optic
Madness.
Shout.
Yeah,
good shout. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a couple of moments too that which I really wasn't expecting, which sound like long distance calling at 1.5x speed, like Big Body, for example. They have that feeling of like a really expressive atmospheric build, but just in the sort of Garin tradition, quite fast and twitchy. That comes in on Icicle Eyelash as well, which I really like. I didn't know he had that in his Rolodex, but it's cool.
Pretty darn frantic.
And then Lit Up as well. Like, that to me sits somewhere in the middle of like White Lung, Mars Volta, and Animals as Leaders, which again, three bands I would not normally associate with Zach.
I mean, I kind of can now with like a lot of the... There's some weird turns in this that I agree with and disagree with. And I guess it's not up to me to choose how weird his turns take, but like Cilantro has the guitar tapping bit, which sounds a little out of place, but it's still a fun kind of song, right?
Well, yeah, that's I mean, that's the classic. I mean, everybody that, you know, every like 13-year-old that picks up a guitar goes, there's like this kind of classic. You know, there's the classic tapping progression, and he begins with that. But what I think makes it fun to listen to is that he starts with the classic progression, but the second half of the tapping is a really kind of interesting, cool chord. So, you know, In Flames have done that, where they begin with the sort of like the cliche progression, and they move somewhere else. And I think if you can justify it, I have no problem. I find the tapping a lot of fun. I think he justifies it. Yeah, but then it goes into like a real samba street party, like sort of Rio, it gives me Rio vibes. And
I know I love
it. Yeah, I like it. I have a lot of tolerance for when like the Strawberry Girls universe does it, but I do think by the end of the album, one of my small gripes would be that there's a little bit too much. Ooh, da, 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 da. That's a lot of that.
I mean, it's good. It's a good beat in order to change chords quickly. Change them up. You can get them on the beat pretty fast. So it adds to the catchiness just by virtue of what the beat is. I agree with that. I think I love a lot of the more subdued and quieter bits, like Twilight. The way that enters. Some things later, like, of course, Icicle Eyelash. What else is there? There's a couple bits spliced between the real punchiness that remind me of Alpha Male Tea Party.
Even on Kit Kat, I heard a little bit of my beloved Cast of Cheers.
Oh fuck, there's that kind of
around, very cool. That the drums are programmed so well on that track, again, you know, it's when you can dance to something, but your dancing makes you look like you're having a fit. That's what, you know, this what he does really well, I think. That kind of jerky math rock danceability.
Yeah. Yeah, jerk rock.
Jerk rock. Well, speaking of jerks, I do think there's definitely like lots of hints of, and when it's instrumental, I'm totally fine with it, but that kind of like Venice Beach sleaze on a couple tracks, you know, where it's got that kind of fuckboy vibe. And if there was some greased up pretty boy singing on it, like there is on sometimes on the Strawberry Girls albums, I might be like, a bit too much. But when it's just guitar, I'm totally on board. I'm totally fine.
It's just his style, and now that it's him doing it on his own, it's more prevalent. I would say some of the songs end where they could continue or develop a little for like, possibly 20 seconds more. Like, I think
Flower
it's
Power?
Big
that was
Body.
The one that left me. Yeah. Oh, Big Body. Okay. Yeah.
Or there's just a couple of them that kind of like end on a quiet loop.
Yeah.
Kind of do do do, and it just kind of goes on for without much development. For a good few seconds, longer than it could, or without changing to it, like if you ended the song on a middle eighth kind of feeling.
It definitely has that. We didn't cover it on the show, but it may well pop up towards the end of the year. And the Glitterer. Did you listen to the Glitterer album?
No, I don't think so.
Has a very like in a more studied way. That has a real commitment to like short songs. It's like every song is like sort of between a minute and a half and maybe 2 minutes 20, and you do get a lot of that where songs will kind of just. It'll be like section, and that's it. It's done. And you definitely get a little bit of that here as well. I don't mind it as much, but I definitely thought for a song like Flower Power, there was not quite enough meat on its bones. And it felt a bit like two sections had just been bolted together. And then that was like, okay, well, this is a song.
It's good bits. It kind of sounds like experimenting more than concrete songs, because they're, some of them just hit just under 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, they do.
Hard
to
restrain yourself like that when you're such a incredible creative guitarist like him, right?
Yeah, and it's just so funny, like when you listen to, I mean, even if you just listen to the different, you know, they're all guitar albums this week, and you know, the slate of records this week maybe doesn't quite represent the variety of stuff that we would cover on a regular basis. But I do think that if you listen to the guitar on every single one of the albums we're covering this week, it's almost impossible to imagine
they're all part of the same.
A guitarist from another record even conceiving of how to play this, or you could pick any combination, it wouldn't work. Like Zachary Garin would never ever write something that Icebreaker could write, would never ever write something that, you know, Really From could write, etc. It's so unique, like, though. I love that.
I don't hold all my inspirations on my sleeve while playing, but occasionally I could if I really pushed myself.
Maybe I'm coming from my own perspective. I feel like, you know, there are certain things that I wouldn't even be able to begin to think about writing. And I think Zachary Garin has such a unique sound that I'm happy to live in his little world,
I would say, like, a counter argument to that was you just have to train yourself to play differently. Right. Composers do it all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. That's true. But I think on something like this, which is like a personal project, a birthday record, a solo
experiment, his personality.
It's
through and through.
You can learn to put on other pairs of shoes, but ultimately at the end of the day, like, your feet are your feet, and I'm sure any one of them would be able to play or force themselves to compose something outside their area of expertise, but this feels so personal to him, and it's really good.
Yeah, like, it does a little different than Strawberry Girls. I mean, it does follow some cliches that we've known.
Yeah, 100%.
But still, it's fun as fuck, dude. It really is.
Yeah. It is. There's lots of variety. It breezes by in 30 minutes. I really like it a lot. I love it too. Yeah, I don't have a massive amount more to say about it, but I think it's great. Yeah. So, what's your favorite track?
It's Robo Trippin', because, oh my god, it's such a bop, and I don't say bop often. I never do, but it is.
It does slap. Yeah.
Yeah. I give this a 7. Very good 7.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I think mine is Bounce House. It just has that lick at the start, which is just so expressive and awesome, and then it builds into like a proper funky jam, and then towards the end it goes into like maybe Vakovi or Yanaka territory, which I was not expecting. So that's got loads of variety. It's an awesome song. It's my favorite one. And I think I'm going to give this an 8, actually.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. It's a good one.
Good stuff. All right, that's 2 by Zachary Garin. And it is on Spotify. It is. It was a Bandcamp only. And I did throw him a few shekels on Bandcamp, but now you can. Cool. Everyone can enjoy on Spotify. So that's good. Okay, so next up, Icebreaker.
Yes,
Icebreaker.
We did cover these guys once, right? I brought an album to the to album club at some point.
My friend, because of our wonderfully intuitive website, I can look this up without even having to pause the show. We've never covered Icebreaker, and I will tell you, Jill, I think you recommended Shock to me pre us doing the show.
Yes, and I remember you're like, ooh, something I haven't touched before with my.
Yeah,
human ears.
And I will say as well, I listened back to Shock, and I think it didn't. A lot of the songs didn't jump out at me, but definitely Schlachtbank did. And I think I dipped in and out of that record and enjoyed it. But so Icebreaker from Fünstenfeldbruch, which is just what a great. It's near Munich, but I had to put it because what a fun word to say.
Yeah.
This is their 8th studio album, and in case the name and the town and everything wasn't enough, and the fact that the album is called, Liebe Mach Monster, and the other album we were talking about is called Shock, they are a Neue Deutsche Härte band in the vein of?
Neue Deutsche Hart. So that's kind of the heavy metal of Germany, I guess, right? It's industrial tinged metal.
Say the or word. Say it.
I don't know the word. Oomph.
Rammstein.
Rammstein? There's a couple, and they're all kind of connected in their own way. They're one big happy family with hammers, dual wielding guitars. It's,
they are.
There's a vibe, an obvious vibe.
Yeah,
I'm to be happy.
It's a bit like we're talking about Chevelle or whatever. It's like, well, it's intricate hard rock with a progressive, you know, edge and Tool. Like, I think with this band, you know, I'm not saying they're Rammstein copyists. I think have loads that they bring to the table of their
own.
They're
much different. Yeah, yeah. But same as not connecting too much to Oomph either, which I think they sound a bit more
Oomph.
I think they do enough. At least on this album, they do enough to kind of differentiate themselves a little bit while keep staying in the same lane.
This is it fits very snugly into the Neue Deutsche Härte genre, which, you know, Joe Public will know as stuff that sounds a bit like Rammstein. But I don't think these are Icebreaker are like a Rammstein covers band by any means. There's one or two songs
that could be Rammstein-ish.
Yeah, but there's one or two, and I know the ones you're talking about. The ones that have that real like
mid tempo,
whatever song that is. I think that's Wir bin ich.
Yeah.
And there's another one towards the start, which is a very, very Rammsteiny riff, but that's the genre they're working in, you know. It's a limited palette, but what they do with it I think is really interesting. And I think the differences from Rammstein start with Alex Veselsky, if that is how you say his name, the vocalist, because even though he has a kind of a Till Lindemann site, like kind of, you know, like stop, nein, danke, like he does do that bootsy kind of like
commanding
Iron Forge growl type voice, yeah, but he also quite a bit on this album does actually sing, like he really brings it up and actually kind of sings in a more
it's got a almost an operatic bombast, a baritone operatic bombast to it,
yeah,
kind of showy kind of voice. Really love it couples really well with what the guitar can do as well.
Especially
the lead guitar.
Oh, 100%. Jürgen Klanger. Really fun guitar parts. And I think shout out just right off the bat to Noel Picks, who's the he's the lead guitarist, but also the producer. And you know, they've really fine tuned how Icebreaker should sound on this album. And it really is quite thrilling when they hit on this album, because the production is just amazing.
Like, where I hear it is at the end of the first song, "Es und sich," where the synth combines with the guitar solo at the end, and it's just an instrumental drive, and it's double bassing to get to a march. It's amazing.
Not es lohnt sich nicht ein Mensch zu sein, which means it's not worth being human. I love how some of their song titles are so depressing. It's great. But
yeah, they are.
But what I love about that song in particular, especially picking it as a first song, because that is not one of the paint by numbers No Digital Heart songs. It starts with an almost kind of metalcore type riff. And then, and it's very much different in that chorus vein of the new Architects record.
Almost a chorus from a different song attaching
to it. From a different song.
And that works. It's a bit jarring first listen, but then I was like, no, this is good. This is right on the money.
Is that the one I'm trying to remember? Is that the riff that goes dun da 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 da? I think it is. I think that's the riff. I'm not singing it right,
like System of a Down.
But there you go. No, but in all seriousness, that's probably not an accident. Like, they genuinely... Throughout this record, I've got, you won't believe some of the bands that I've written down as influences. But on that track, I think it definitely it's coming from a similar hymn sheet to the Architects record, and I love that synth solo. And synth throughout this record is so front and center.
It's a treat. It's a real treat when it comes around. It's a treat.
Was there a particular album just before I'll let you speak? But just because I think it's really kind of the elephant in the room, at points throughout this album. Especially, say, Nein Danke, and then moving towards the sort of the back half of the record, there's another song, Es Liebe der Tod. Is there a very seminal album in the world of nu metal that you think this reminds you of? Because there's one for me.
Maybe, there's always bits. I think it holds hands with the new Rammstein record a little bit.
Okay.
There's a bit there, when it comes to like fast tempo catchiness that they did on the new record. They do a lot of fast tempo stuff here as well.
Yeah.
But which one are you talking about in particular?
Path of Totality by Korn. The dubstep collaboration record with
that's an interesting call.
Skrillex and
I did not have that in my ears.
Kill the Noise.
Time.
Oh man, I can see it. And particularly Nein Danke. And
okay,
I just think
I see that.
Because
I got that kind of energy at the end of the second song, Fack. Which is like your typical sexually provocative German song. It's just in their blood to do a song like this.
It's definitely along the same lines as like Pussy or whatever by Rammstein. Is that what that song is actually called? Pussy,
But that's a real cool one. It's got kind of a slow stomp to it that you can really get crunk to. The only word I can say. Like, the video is basically that, right?
I haven't seen the video, but you get crunk is the perfect turn of phrase for that song. It has this weird, like, early 2000s, like, kind of crunk core sort of intro, and then, it does that sort of, like, shock by Fear Factory thing of, like, fuck. You know,
and like,
fuck.
Like the end of it has, like, this kind of digitized female voice coming in, talking about being the flyest at the party. And I'm like, this is real, really... just fun. It's stupid fun, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a, there's definitely a touch of that, like, dad rapping on Dagegen as well, and System Sprenger. I think there's also a bit more of that, like, you know, and you're sort of going, oh, okay, you know what? But I let them away with it because they're just so far removed from ever being, like, authentic rappers that I'm sort of like, oh, it's fine.
I'm not judging a book by its color, but, like, the lead singer, his visual representation in this album is, like, yellow suspenders, kind of black and white out, and he's a bald guy with, like, this silver tinged beard, and it's totally a Neue Deutsche Harte thing, but, like, tinged with these other electronic, as you said, Path of Totality elements leads to something really, really fresh. I think
and even there's a good variety in the, I mean, like you say, that, like, we know the riffs that sound like they are very typical to the genre, but then, you know, there's a lot of little surprises in there. I think the particularly High Society, right towards the end, there's a riff that reminds me of Turbo Wolf. Remember that song? Do you remember Domino by Turbo Wolf? Like that?
I do.
Like that. Like that's a real cool fuzzed out, almost kind of like stonery riff. Then on, you know, on Control Velos, there's a song that I mean, that riff is very kind of Nickelback meets Alter Bridge or something, you know, like that kind
Alter Bridge for sure, yeah.
Southern fried metal, definitely.
I think, like, Dagegen, which sounds a bit like it has the slightiness of Skindred.
Skindred for sure.
Featuring the singer of Oomph, Derogoy.
Oh, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was like, of course, he's everywhere.
I was gonna say that one's kind of a funny one because that's another sort of, like,
it's got a real bite to it,
hip hop inspired one, but or like new metal inspired maybe. But then the solo is, I mean, it has to be a conscious tribute to Tom Morello's solo from Killing in the Name. I mean, it's very similar.
I'd say that it's got a real drive to it. I love it. I love that coupling, even though their voices are kind of similar. To having two voices like that stacked on top of each other, that works so well just by where they're placed in the... they're both baritones, right? They're both very much baritone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It just works.
Do you know what I found? Another surprising moment. I mean, on an album full of surprising moments, like on an album where, like, on Im Guten, Im Bösen, I thought the chorus reminded me of Director. And that's a reference no one's going to get, right? But they were like an Irish indie rock band. So just to, like, put you in a different mind frame. But no, one thing that I loved, so System Sprenger has... So it has two elements that I did not expect, that song. First off... There's a guitar part in the pre-chorus that sounds like Pretty Little Dirty by Red Hot Chili Peppers, i.e. the guitar part that we all know from Butterfly by Crazy Town.
I know it. That stuck out. That really stuck out. Well, apparently, like, by the book song, but
No. But, well, then at the end, instead of... So you're expecting, like, a big kind of guitar fucking beatdown. But instead what you get is something that's closer to, like, Uppermost or Sebastian or something, where it's, like, it's a hard, distorted synthesizer part that's, like, electro house, like French electro house. That's cool. That's really cool.
That really lends well to Verbenich after.
Yeah, really. And Verbenich, that chorus, if you stuck speed straight on that song, it could be a Soulworks song. Chorus particularly. You know? So lots of variety, I have to say, in the songwriting.
One riff that's in my brain 24/7 is the Himmel. Like that kind of drill beat is so, so good. I think it's Himmel, anyway.
Is that Himmel? Himmel is the slow jam. The one that's like...
It's somewhere around there, maybe. I can't remember. Is it Liebe Mac Monster? I don't know. It's...
That's Control Velos. That's the one that I said sounded like Nickelback.
My bad. But I love that industrial hammer that they sometimes lend to this. But yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. And we haven't even, I mean, yeah, like Liza Dyan has that kind of like disco metal thing. Like I keep expecting like Gwen Stefani or Britney Spears or something. So like that's a rock up to the track. It's very funny.
The fact that you're so close to doing that is a good sign that you could imagine something widely different.
It's, you know what? It's too long, but this album, it's way too long. It's nearly an hour.
That's the thing. It is, but you listen to like High Society and stuff, and it's like, whoa, this is a great song at the tail end of the album. So I had fun all the way through it, even though I agree.
I think I would only pluck out, I think this would be an incredibly solid, like, it's 50, that's, I think it's 58 minutes or something. I think literally songs. Take out two tracks, max, maybe one.
And even still, those two tracks are probably of a good bit of nice stuff to give, right?
Yeah, But I could probably do without From a Man. I could probably do without maybe, I mean, maybe one of the, probably Liza Dyan as well towards the end. But really, it's quite a strong album.
Even Liza Dyan ends well. I'm glad you're surprised, right?
I am surprised too, because I was it really comes to life on headphones, this record. It really does. You know, there's nothing more disappointing than putting on your headphones and hearing really nothing extra and feeling like you've squeezed everything out of the album that you're going to before you even put them on. But then at the same time, there's nothing more exciting than putting on your headphones and actually hearing a much more detailed album than you thought you
were going to listen to. I believe that was your kind of feeling on the Oomph record, even though I liked it a bit more. I agree.
You liked it a lot more than me.
I never listened to it again.
The Oomph record for me didn't have a... Yeah, the Oomph record didn't have a huge amount more to give, if I remember correctly. But this... I really like. Thank you for bringing it in, by the way, because I was a little bit wary.
An hour long German rock record.
Oi,
commitment risk, but hey.
I was confident. Let's be honest, my first reaction, Dill, was halt, stop, nein, danke. But
it's like Rammstein. You don't want to hear it in English. You don't translate it.
No, please.
Same with like Japanese music. Sounds a bit weird. Yeah.
What's your track?
Fuck, dude. It's Dagegen with Daryl Gray.
Oh, just Dagegen.
My dream match. Even though he's in every Noido Jaharda featured record from like Thornstar to here. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Thornstar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hit or miss on this genre, but this is a hit. And it's for me, it's Nine Danke. That song is incredible. I think it's one of the best songs of the year. I mean, like,
whoa, okay.
Yeah, that's got the Path of Totality, like, you know, beat, like sort of a weird beat down where everything gets like sort of fucked up in a dubstep way, and it's got these synthwave verses, and then that, you know, again, that halt, stop, nein, danke. I can't get enough of that chorus. It's so good. I've actually been sending that to a few people, and they're like, I hate myself, but I love this.
Yeah, just loosen yourself up and enjoy a bit of ridiculous German rock. It's nothing else like it on the planet, really.
No, it's very, not it's really, quite, no. It's quite unique. Yeah, definitely. Also, I just would love to know, last note, but I'd love to know if System Sprenger is influenced in any way by the film System Sprenger, which in English territories was called System Crasher, which, if you haven't seen it, it's probably the most scary film you'll ever see that isn't a horror, right? It's about a kid. Have you seen it?
No, but I've heard people who love it.
My God. That film is like getting put in a washing machine. It's about a kid who is eternally in kind of foster care, and she is, to say that she is a difficult child is to put it as mildly as possible. It is absolutely terrifying what this child gets up to. Acting is amazing. It's a brilliant film. Definitely one of the best German films of the last few years.
Wow.
So check it out, System Sprenger. I just was just curious whether or not they watched it and wrote, of course, a song about it.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to give my rating. I'm giving this. I'm giving this a 9. I love it that much. Just a little long. I agree.
Yeah, I'll give it a really good 8.
Nice. That's a real big surprise.
You know it, my friend. We're all about surprises here. But yeah, that's a good nugget of music. All right. Speaking of, Really From, Boston is the answer.
That's awesome to hear.
This is their third set. Well, could they be from anywhere else? In all seriousness, listen to the record.
You're right. I mean, possibly a variety of places, but I agree.
Yeah, so Really From, that's their third record, but it is self-titled, and I think probably the reason for that will become clear. It is very much a statement of artistry and a kind of a definitive, like, this is who we are. Michi Tassi, keyboard player, Chris Lee Rodriguez, guitarist, Matt Hull, trumpeter, and Sander Bryce, drummer, and the producer is Sai Badupalli. And I gotta say, just I want to name them all because I think everybody on this album, producer included, plays a very important role in the sound of Really From, which, well, I'd love to hear how you describe it, Dylan, actually. As you munch down on some Cinnamon Toast Crunch prawn tails.
I'll try and keep that on a low.
That's going to date this episode.
But my God, it has a lot of the kind of sleeper indie core, Boston core stuff that we know and sort of love. I know you jive with it a lot more than me, but I can recognize it for what it is.
Yeah.
And it's also got elements of Wang Wen.
Oh,
in there,
yeah,
or some real kind of even like some of the Korean bands we've covered that incorporate trumpets and kind of orchestrated elements around wind instruments like that.
Yeah, yes,
into their rock, and this is kind of there too, with tinges of Weezer. It's got a good bit, right? To love, a good bit to hate as well. But I love it because it's got both, and it can do both. And there's loads of elements that I can truly enjoy, despite my trepidation of this kind of, as I said, the Boston sleepercore.
Yeah,
I don't know what the genre
actually, funny enough, it does share, but like Boston is typically more associated with kind of hardcore and that type of scene, whereas this to be fair, it's more Midwest emo, like the two three references that jumped out at me constantly were obviously American Football and then The Sea and Cake and Sunny Day Real Estate. Like, those are kind of the three. But what I love about this is it's so intimately weaves the brass all the way throughout. It's not like on American Football where every kind of three or four songs you'll get like 20 seconds of trumpet.
It's built within it all. But my God, dude, just to begin, listening to the first song, I had no idea where this was going, what genre template it was taking. I thought it was just going to be instrumental because I haven't heard this band before. And
me either. They're new to me too. Totally new.
Thank you, Top Shelf Records, for giving us this. Truly.
Did this record come out on Top Shelf? I know their previous stuff had, but I hadn't actually...
I saw they put it up on their YouTube channel individually. So,
oh,
yeah.
It is Top Shelf. Yeah, it is Top Shelf.
That makes sense.
And actually, funnily enough, on Yellow Fever, there is a touch of that tricot thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is a little touch of it, huh? So they're definitely a Top Shelf band. And actually, I meant to say there's an English band, Tangled Hair, who they remind me of a little bit as well, particularly on Quirk. And I was wondering, was Tangled Hair a Top Shelf band? Because they certainly sound like one. But they're a big Scary Monsters band. And this, to be honest with you, Really From would fit right at home on Big Scary Monsters as well. So
For sure.
They are awesome. I agree. Apartment Song, you don't know where it's going. It starts off with this really soothing jazz piano and atmospheric textures, and there's a little just hint of voice, and the trumpet just floats in on a cloud, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And then all of a sudden there's this drum freak out, you know, in the vein of Dinosaur or Go-Go Penguin or something like that, and then all of a sudden the guitar comes in really intricate and spidery and emo, and then it ends on this, it just lifts right up onto this incredible groove, and you're away. And I think, you know, what the hell are they doing here? And why do I like it so much? And it just keeps that level then throughout the record, there's such a nice variety between, I think Mitchie's vocals are so kind of, they're just really, really well executed.
I would say, I mean, positive to the other guy as well, great lyricist. But I'm with that vocal more than the other.
Yeah, and that's where I have a certain level of tolerance for that type of vocal, which is your kind of the ragged, emo, like quite nasally delivery. Where you lose me is stuff like I get a bit sick of it on bands like La Dispute and Touche Amore, but here I think it's just right on the line of I really like that delivery that he gives.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, I mean, like, it's not,
I really
quite,
like it.
It's not quite grating as like, I don't know, a girl band.
Yeah.
Like, you know where I'm coming from?
Oh yeah, no, I know. Yeah, it's that kind of it's a staple of the genre.
Yes.
And yes. But I think they do it in a really good way, like a Mineral or a Braid or a Texas is the Reason way, and not in a La Dispute or a Touche Amore way where it gets too much for me. Or Spanish Love Songs is another one where I just can't engage with that voice. It's just too much. Yeah.
I think this band does so much that I barely cringe because there's so much good.
Yeah, good. But I think Mitchie gets her moment in the sun on Yellow Fever, and you know, and that's and so many of these songs deal with in a really direct way with topics, and you know, emo, I love it, it's one of my favorite genres of music, but you know, it can be very it can be very self-reflective in a quite nebulous way, that where the lyrics
self-deprecating
kind of Yeah, but the lyrics kind of can blend into the wallpaper a little bit. And I love that this band are, you know,
oh yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, their name is like, you know, I think if not all of them, certainly the majority of the band are from, you know, minority communities, and they would have grown up with, you know, trying to say on trilingual, that they're literally trying to learn.
Yeah.
They grew up in Boston and their native language is English, but they're trying to learn, be it Spanish or Japanese or what have you, like the language of their immigrant communities. And on Yellow Fever, I think, you know, Mitchie touches on that sense of being fetishized for being Asian. And it's a topic you just don't hear dealt with.
But also not, right? There's so many negatives with that, as we've seen in the news recently in the States.
Yeah.
It can be fetishized and it can be the exact opposite.
Yeah, it can be
a very weird
opposite
world for people who are people. So, yeah, people,
yeah,
frustrations.
Just trying to live their lives. And it's like, again, I'm from here. Similar thing. You know, it's that never ending, like, where are you really from? You know, and it literally feeds into the name of the band. But they're like, how can I spell it out for you? Like, I'm from here.
Fucking the Irish are the worst at it.
Yeah, we're
ironically
dreadful.
Enough,
we are dreadful, but we're trying to be better. And yeah, there's just so many nice little things about like leaving your shoes at the door, and then I think on you know, In the Spaces, there's that kind of have some kids, cook some rice, and it's all just so mundane for somebody that comes from that community that, you know, you would never get on, say, a Radiohead album, which I think that song is quite Radiohead inspired, but lyrically, It's extremely unique.
You wouldn't expect it from Radiohead at all.
No. Yeah. I think, like, probably the best moment on the album, you might agree or maybe disagree, is that amazing emo jazz explosion on trilingual.
Oh my god.
Love it.
It's such a math rocky element. When I thought I was totally going to be chilled for a while. Ticked all the boxes, dude. It's so different. It sounds, fuck, I don't know what it sounds like.
All I've got is the scene kick. Yeah, that's the only reference point I've got for that one. But that's just my god. Elephant Jim, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But that's just what a great moment, and they just give it to you for a little bit and then it's done, but it's so good.
Yeah, a lot of like bursts of ingenious moments in this.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love the end sections as well, coming up to the house, which is a bit of an odd one. The house is an odd ending.
I think
ending.
It really works as a final track because it sounds like a phone recording. It's just a lo-fi, you know.
It does. Like, I don't know if that's what I was expecting, though. I was expecting maybe a bit more of an end piece like the first song, which is kind of what you get in The Spaces.
In The Spaces, I think, is the real finale, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The other one's just kind of a coda, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a bonus type thing.
And it just works. It works, despite the little bits, as I've stated, that kind of make me a bit bored lyrically. Okay. Yeah, really with the male vocals, I it's just not for me.
That's fair.
But the rest is so strong. So strong.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and even on a short album, like, you've got The House and then you've got Last Knee Play, which is this just really puts me in the mind of like a peaceful sunrise or something, like,
yeah,
you know, like out in the countryside. It's just this gorgeous, it's just an acoustic guitar and the trumpet. And yeah, it really works. And the fact that in such a short album, it's like 36 minutes or something, but, you know, that they can really give you so many different flavors and stopgaps and moments to breathe, but then also the little punk chugs and different things that come in.
It's so well paced, and I could only imagine this was a nightmare to construct, because there's so many different people with different influences coming in at different angles. Yeah. But they balance it well between, as I said, there's a bit of stoner rock in there.
Little hint of it, yeah.
I don't mean stoner rock. I would mean kind of something Weezer would do riff-wise.
Mm.
There's a bit of that riffage there where I expect more subdued stuff, and that caught me by surprise. Yeah. I love those moments, as I've said.
Yeah, the end of In the Spaces, I think, has a real bang of Mogwai off it, you know, or maybe Caspian. Or
the Mogwai
like
is super strong on this, actually. The
Mogwai is strong. Yeah. No, it is. I agree. I totally agree. I think it's constructed not in a not dissimilar way to Nothing Is True and Everything Is Possible by Antishikari. Not that it sounds like that album, but just it's a short album with lots of little pockets and corners and alcoves and twists.
That was the thing with Antishikari, that this is an album as well that you live with. You don't just go on for 2-3 listens. Like, I'm still adjusting to it, which is why I'm finding it hard to get words for what I really think. This could be in my top 20.
Yeah.
My dislike for some bits.
No, for sure. Yeah. It's everything that I want. You know, when we listen to a band like, I'm trying to think of some of the more, like, I know my frame of reference for like modern jazz or whatever isn't great, but like, say, like a band like Dinosaur, or even a band like Black Country New Road, who are getting a ton of press and attention at the moment. I still think that they never quite hit that balance the way that really From hit that balance. And maybe it's the fact that their other set of influences outside of jazz is, you know, is kind of stuff that I really like, in terms of like
Mouse on the Keys is there as well.
Yeah, somewhere. Mouse on the Keys is there as well. And yeah, then you're getting into like kind of that, yeah, Go Go Penguin, Fox Capture Plan, all that kind of stuff. And maybe Light.
But this is the first band I've seen that has like the kind of grungy indie guitar to it.
Exactly.
That they didn't have.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a real unique aspect. And I think between the two vocalists, even if you're not so fond of Chris's vocals, I think they're very much a quadruple threat. Like, everybody in the band contributes
well.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
This is a sleeper hit for me. I think this is one of the best albums of the year so far.
Yeah, easily. Fucking every top shelf record is always worth interest.
That's exactly what it says in the tin.
Yeah, there's so many so many came out last year that I didn't even get on my pre top 20 to the top 20, right? Like, they're on a top shelf. They're on a roll. They know their market, I guess, and who they're going for. And I don't know how that works, but it works.
Sure. Yeah. No. It is. Definitely. It's awesome. My favorite track is probably Apartment Song. I think the first song is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Mine's Trilingual. I'm From Here. It's Trilingual. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the same kind of reasons. The lyrics are fucking great, dude. Mm-hmm. Fucking great.
Really, really good. I'm going to give this a 9.
Yeah. Give this a listen for the music, then listen to it again for the lyrics. That's what you should do, because there's so much clashing as well. I'm going to give this an 8.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. So what a, yeah, like a really, really strong crop of albums this week, I got to say. And like something for everyone. Yeah, that album, you know, I really love it in that it's, and we'll move on, but I love it in that it's challenging, but there's enough to sweeten up every song that I don't think it ever would alienate somebody. Yeah. But it's a very smart album. It's a smart album. Yeah.
I like these abrasive, rewarding listens.
Yeah, me too.
Bring them on.
Really From by Really From. Definitely check that out. Okay, and we move on.
Yes, we do.
To our wonderful time machine, all shiny and chrome. And we punch in 1987.
We're going back.
This was the fourth album in the 10th year of Def Leppard. Sheffield band, although you wouldn't know it to listen to them.
you wouldn't, but then again, like, if you listen close enough, you hear not just Sheffield, you hear fucking Ireland as well. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. There's some cool facts about that. Oh. So a lot of this album, the songwriting sessions were recorded across the road from my old house.
Oh, no way.
In Docky.
That is really funny. So the album is Hysteria, by the way, in case I don't think I said it. But okay, so...
Yeah.
So explain that to me then. What's the Ireland connection?
I believe the Ireland I think they just lived here for a bit. They were producing. Some of the producers were here. I mean,
yeah, it looks they did some recording in Step Aside. Yeah,
they lived in Step Aside. I think they lived here in Ireland for a bit. I know Joe Elliott's, or it's either Joe Elliott or Phil Collins' wife lived here. In Docky, or still lives here. There's some rumors about it, but yeah, there's a connection, and they stated that last time I saw them here, which is 2019.
Wow!
So they have a connection.
They have an Ireland connection. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no. So Def Leppard. I mean, this album seems to have come at a period of upheaval for the band, in that they were kind of on a successful track with, you know, Pyromania and High and Dry. Mm-hmm. And I think there was an album before that as well, but they all came in very quick succession, and they were building up an organic following with their kind of their own brand of glam metal, and then
but not wanting to be called glam metal, wanting to kind of break a little bit off, because that's just not what they thought they were, right?
And then this one. Well, I mean, you know, I don't think, and you and I, with the fullness of time, can have this discussion of this is a hard rock record. This isn't a metal album. It's, you know, it's as much inspired by like Phil Collins as it is by, you know,
Queen.
You, like Kiss or Black Sabbath or Queen or what?
I'm not sure if you saw, you keep up with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame every year, but Brian May was the guy who inducted these guys into the Hall of Fame, and he was like, these are totally these guys are in situ with us totally as inspirations, so back and forth. So much of that
bigness. So I guess I was a bit surprised to begin with, but I shouldn't have been, because that this was the whole story around the album was that they worked and they co-wrote with Mutt Lange, the South African producer who, you know, Meatloaf stuff, right? Yeah, well, no. That was Joe Steinman. They booted him out early in the sessions.
Yes,
but
that was
it. Mutt Lange, like his credentials, I couldn't, like, they just, if you listen to the list of artists, I'm like, this makes perfect sense, because you've got the Boomtown. This is now, some of these are post, but it all makes sense. So you've got the Boomtown Rats, AC/DC, Foreigner, and then Bryan Adams, Michael Bolton, Shania Twain, The Corrs, and in more modern times, Nickelback, Maroon 5, and Muse. I'm like, yep, somewhere between Shania Twain, Michael Bolton, and AC/DC sit Def Leppard on this record.
It was the right choice. This could have been a much more Meatloafish record if it wasn't for that change. And I'm glad for that.
For sure.
He gave them the chance to be really... thorough with the different kind of hard rock 80s sound than what was come to expect back in that day.
Right. And I do find it hysterical that there is somebody in the band called Phil Collin.
Yeah.
when the very first track, I was like, okay, yeah. I hear a lot of Phil here. But yeah.
I believe he's the one who lives he lives in Stepaside right now as we speak.
Oh, does he? Oh, yeah, interesting. Yeah. That's really funny. But yeah, no, so listen, anyway, this is it's kind of a long magnum opus from Def Leppard.
One of the biggest albums. Yeah. One of the longest albums to be recorded initially on CD. Right.
I might be the first victim of CD bloat, which is a phenomenon in the late 80s to mid late 90s when albums that it probably, you know, could have been a really incredible sort of 46, 47 minutes ended up being kind of pushed out to past the hour mark to fill up a CD. Now, that being said, I don't want to start on a negative, but I do think this suffers from CD bloat. But that being said, I can tell why this is a kind of a classic album. You can tell.
Yeah, like an album intended to be kind of like single bait almost.
Yeah.
There were six singles, I recall. That's nuts.
Yeah, it's a lot of singles.
it was I think one of the most expensive records at the time, 1.2 million.
Jeez.
So they had to really break even, and they fucking did.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely, it took like a year to get where they needed to in the States, but in England it was instant, I think.
Yeah, there seems to have been a massive amount of time required to get Rick Allen back, because he was obviously in a really tragic car accident not long before and lost his arm. I mean, everybody knows that Rick Allen from Def Leppard only has one arm. But this was the first album where he got set up with his electronic kit and the MIDI triggers and all that stuff.
Yeah, and amazing to know how he did that. But like just being in his hospital bed 6 weeks later, he was back in the band.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Like, regardless of his kind of initial disability to balance properly standing up, he was back in the band because he was determined to learn in his hospital bed, thanks to the equipment hooked up to him, how to kind of like hit beats as well. Because what else are you going to do staving the boredom of recovery in a hospital bed for fucking yonks after you lose an arm? Being such a passionate music guy, it's an incredible story.
It is, for sure. And the drumming on this album, like, it's really interesting. It has such a unique sound, especially for the era, this album, because it's hyper produced. You know, there's like layers and layers of guitar and vocals.
There had to be electronic drums
sampled.
Yeah, his left foot controlled closing, like, had four pedals closing hi-hat, closing the hi-hat, cymbals and toms. So he had a lot to do with his left foot, and the rest just did the natural stuff with the bass drum. He makes the most of this the situation.
Yeah, I think thoroughly. So.
Like even like it's so simple, but it works. Much like an AC/DC or a Queen drums would work, he just makes it work. It's not too flashy, but it works perfectly within everything, and it just sounds big. The snare is incredible. The snare is, you know, when you think of shotgun snare, I think of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's, funnily enough, production-wise, you know, maybe this comparison has been drawn before, but it really reminds me of Images and Words by Dream Theater.
Nice. Yeah, I think it reminds me a lot of Queen. At their power metal-iest. Probably just a real big influence during that time.
On Rocket, when you get that I never love when bands do this, when you get like a big long list of cringy references. You've got like Sergeant Pepper, Benny of the Jets, but then they bring in Killer Queen, so
it
Queen,
times it puts it in a time capsule somewhat.
And Bowie and all that kind of stuff get shout outs, but they were clearly, you know, influenced by and probably influenced Queen, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like I love like kind of the pseudo prog elements that come into this album as well. You hear in Rocket, like at the end,
yeah,
when it's like ramping up, but everything steps back and it just does this kind of
vamping, basically
the vamping anticipation and kind of weird audio stuff. And then it goes straight into kind of the double time ending, which I fucking love. I get so hype over that.
Yeah.
And then Animal is the song they spent 3 years on.
Wow.
Mulling over kind of to get it right, because there's so many production. Like, production during this wasn't a dreadful moment, but there was just so much intricate stuff they had to do well that they were excited for. So it wasn't a matter of, like, getting tired of being pushed around by the producer, which I'm sure they did at bits frustrated. But they were excited all the way through because they knew from the get-go this was such a important classic undertaking. That's I love that kind of enthusiasm towards an album like this, and it shows.
Yeah, you mentioned the pseudo prog. I definitely think there's a lot of that in the end of Gods of War.
Yes,
and they do use a lot of like samples and stuff. It's a bit reminiscent of One by Metallica, which predates.
Or Thin Lizzy.
There's
a lot of whittly guitar.
Rush was the one that I really kind of gravitated towards on that track, and I was like, yes, like I'll be honest, some of the kind of rootin' tootin' stuff that's very straight ahead, I'm a bit like, but on like Gods of War, like that bit where there's a little bit of kind of weird time signature and mixed with that production, I really loved that.
Thunderous. From thunderous drums from the Thunder God himself.
And Run Riot has a similar thing going on. It's quite funny that nearly every chorus has the same like gang vocals, and then Joe kind of comes in
They all do it really well. Like, of course, you hear it in Animal. Each or is it? It's Animal. Or Hysteria, the one that has each of them singing the verse differently. There's another one coming on each time.
There's definitely one where they do a little bit of an ill-advised kind of and Pour Some Sugar on Me, obviously everybody knows, but there's that kind of like, I wonder if they just threw it in because like License to Ill by Beastie Boys was so huge at the time, but there's that kind of like
that's the thing, it's totally a product of like what was around at the time, which was Aerosmith and Run DMC.
That's what I was going to say. Aerosmith and Run DMC. And they were like,
Why can't a hard rock band? Why can't we do that? Because hard rock bands during the time were so like in the same lane, right?
Yeah,
they didn't want to do a rap rock thing, and it's interesting. Listen to this song. Going,
here are all the reasons, but Pour Some Sugar on Me. Like, are you
with a microscope? Now it's in album form.
Yeah, right. Were you going to say that it's one of the maybe slightly weaker cuts?
It was originally not going to be in the album. It was the last one to be recorded.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's important because it's them having fun and experimenting. I mean, I love it. I love just kind of the toss-ups between the singing at bits. Of course, it's a bit of a... I love it. I can't help but love it. It's in my blood to kind of love it.
I think it's got a real, and it's funny because Mutt Lange was literally married to Shania Twain for a while, but I think it has a real kind of Shania Twain meets Bon Jovi kind of like country fried type vibe to it.
Bits were very We Will Rock You inspired, I think. That was the intent.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pour Some Sugar on Me is a little bit of a Frankenstein's monster, to be honest with you, between We Will Rock You and I Love Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
Like that chorus is very much I Love Rock and Roll.
Yeah, to be honest, if you went to whenever the next Def Leppard gig hits here, you would love it live.
I'm sure.
There's a lot of this stuff that can convert. They're one of the bands that I know that strangers to the music have come to adore seeing live for the first time.
Yeah.
It is that kind of thing, the arena rock effect, where even if the music doesn't strike for you live, they have they chew the scenery.
I'm sure they do.
The last time I saw this was during the anniversary, where they played it in full, and then they did like a by request set afterwards. And it flows so well live. It's totally like a live setup album. I love when bands do this, which is not much anymore, but it's like this is meant to be played live. Like Ocean Machine, for example.
Right,
flows really well live. This flows really well live. They have theatric setup for each theming of each song. And I think it's grown better in modern times as they play it, because they can reflect on stuff like Love and Affection and Hysteria are really like are now kind of nostalgic to their time growing up, which is weird because they wrote it in 1987. Like, it's an interesting effect.
I do find it funny when they go for the, like, just to take two examples, like Women and then maybe Love Bites are both quite like quite serious in tone in like the chords that are chosen, and like you know, they're going for that, like Love Bites more so maybe like Phil Collins, Michael Bolton, maybe Women is kind of more along the lines of Living on a Prayer, but like that kind of, I was kind of listening in, and I wasn't really tuned into the lyrics, but I was kind of like,
when
you
look in the mirror, do you see me?
But then like, you know, I was like, this is probably about poverty or something, and then listen to Women, and it's just like this horny anthem, like it really
it's horny on main. Like thoroughly like they were in the
80s. It's like the lyrics are like, I don't want to touch you too much, baby, because making love to you might drive me crazy. And I'm like, oh, okay. These are just like dude bro lyrics. And that's fine, because that's what this is. It's like hair metal, you know, or glam metal.
It's just so...
it's not Dream Theater or Rush.
It's so in your brain from the get-go. Like,
But the production puts me in the mind of like Geddy Lee singing about, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, or like James the Brie singing about like alcoholism, you know.
This is a band that loved that stuff as well, just as much. They're singing about different things, but like Phil Collins, for example, just loves like power metal stuff, like where Thin Lizzy were at the time almost. Yeah. And like it's a mash to make something else, and I love that each member kind of loved their different things. And Steve Clark is, rest his soul, he was the rhythm guitarist.
Dope. Yeah, yeah.
And now recently, Vivian Campbell, who was from Belfast, took over the line.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Another connection there. But yeah, I love his riffing as well. It couples so well with the lead guitar. If you wonder where I get my lead guitar inspiration from, it's Phil Collins first and foremost over anybody else in the world. Right. And I don't know if that strikes out, but yeah, that's where my mind goes. And he's got kind of not quite a Motley Crue guitar lead, but it's very sparkly, big, spacey, almost like Joe Satriani before Joe Satriani. What did you think about the solos and stuff?
Well, I was surprised at kind of how few of them really that there were, but I thought the solo in like Animals was good, or Animal
Hysteria.
There's a cool harmonized guitar solo in Don't Shoot Shotgun, and I always I like a harmonized guitar solo.
Yeah. Oh, good. It's so good. Oh, it's in my brain all the time, even when I'm not listening to this.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I don't, like, this isn't necessarily my area of expertise. I can't, it's hard for me to sort of pick apart what's like exceptional guitar work in this genre, but you know, I think whatever they've done with they've done a lot with what they've had for these songs, like definitely the guitar work suits a lot. The songs
there
sure.
is a stupid amount of production and layering in this to get it right, some of the vocals are just so pristinely raspy. And yet, like, they reach these heights that I love.
Well, very much in the vein, I think, when Joe Elliott hits the high notes, it's very much Axl Rose territory. And I know this is just Appetite for Destruction. But so it's not like, if anything, Axl Rose was copying Joe Elliott. But yeah, do you know that kind of, it's a little bit
like
Bon
just
Scott
before the
as well.
Just before the chorus to Don't Shoot Shotgun hits, he hits the he hits these high notes as well. It's all over the place. Armageddon is kind of the more country tinged one that I actually love. I truly love that one.
Yeah, that's very classic rock. Sort of meets the Police.
A tonk. It got a bit of a tonk to it.
Yeah, it does. But that's fine. And I was expecting a little bit of that. Honestly, I was a bit like, I was kind of pleasantly surprised by how much of the more kind of moody chordy 80s stuff there was on this compared to the, you know, like, or even there's like quite a lot of like that pristine sort of Cyndi Lauper Madonna style pop if you listen to a track like Animal. And then obviously there's tons and tons of that Aerosmith kind of gurning, like gyrating in leather pants type stuff. But there isn't as much of the bluesy kind of classic rock inspired
like riffing. There is an Excitable, which I can leave out, and Love and Affection kind of sounds like Hysteria's B-side. It's Are you excitable? But yeah. Your Love and Affection kind of sound, you know, I could do without those two. They still go down well live. It's still fun to see it.
Yeah, I did think it was a bit of a ramp. I thought after Run Riot, we started to sort of lightly ramp down.
Well, like Hysteria's a finale song, right? Mm. It seems like such a finale anthem.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Excitable has like kind of got this sort of Huey Lewis in the News, Michael Jackson thing going on, which is a bit like very much of the time. I think Excitable just sounds really, really of its time. And then Love and Affection, you're dead right. It sort of sounds like a B-side to what's happened earlier in the record.
Still fun. Yeah. It's got the, yeah.
But there's your CD bloat right there, is Excitable and Love and Affection. Yeah. I finish off on Hysteria, and there isn't really... I could take or leave Don't Shoot Shotgun, but that's just me. I can tell it's a very beloved song.
I'm all for it. Like... No, yeah. It's for what gets me in that song is just how not the chord structuring, but just it's one of the more fast tempo ones.
Yeah,
I love it when they go fast tempo, of course.
It is.
And
and Joe's little like spoken word bits are just so funny. You know, like at the end of Rocket, it's like Rocket, yeah,
yeah. I love it so much.
Like he just comes in at the end of nearly every song going like, yeah, God.
There's rarely any bands besides maybe Queen to an extent where like I want to sing along to four voices at once. Like each harmony I want to sing all at the same time, and it drives me nuts.
It drives me crazy. It is funny how often they have the gang vocals. Go on.
What is your favorite part of this? Because I know you seem a little more on board than I thought.
My favorite moment, I am actually this. You know, I think this is good. You know what I mean? I can tell it for what it is. It is, you know, it is really good.
Realizing why it's in my top five somehow.
I'm a little bit less, but you know, you get attached to stuff, you know. And I definitely can see how these songs could worm their way into your fibers of your being.
I'm a hard rock fan. Yeah. And I was born and raised on 80s music. Yeah. So kind of like, was it Nightfly Orchestra? Or what was the band again?
Yeah, Nightfly Orchestra. Yeah.
They were born on Def Leppard too. Yep. So
yeah, and can hear that lineage for sure.
The attachment is there. And I love the corniness. I'm all for it. Pour some sugar on me, I'm still down for it. Yeah, you know, as long as it's them doing it, not anybody else.
Yeah, no, for sure. My favorite record, my favorite moments are definitely those kind of Rush-ish moments on like Run Riot and
Gods of War.
Yeah, those would be my favorite bits.
That sounds I love how that ends as well, by the way. I love that kind of the dread that looms in the end. It doesn't end like a typical song. It just kind of, you hear like once again like one, like the machine gun fire and stuff, and minor keys, and it's cool. But yeah, I'd say like after this, I've liked their music less and less, their output. Okay. Yeah. Even the album they released in 2015, I had a handful of songs to really like, but nothing's ever truly captured the magic of this. And I don't know if that has to do with just kind of the inescapability of the 90s hitting this kind of band.
Yeah.
Even though 91 was their next album, and they still did a good bit of this, Rock of Ages, if you know that song, that's on that album. They got Vivian Campbell in 1992, and the albums he's featured on, still solid. I think he's just as good. He's just as good as Steve Clark. He holds it down. He's treasured to the band and the fans just as much as Steve Clark was, even though he wasn't featured on the recognizable albums. And that just goes to show the camaraderie that comes with this kind of band. I'm glad they're around. I wish I wish her output was a bit more. It's somewhat there. It's less so now. I mean, God, they're almost. They're in their early 60s, right? I think like Joe's like 61. They've still got the voice. His voice has not waned at all.
That's good.
Fucking Phil Collin is this sweaty, muscle-bound, topless guitarist on stage. It's insanity to see a man that age with a body that good.
Body, he's a healthy
man. Yeah. You got to be when you're doing that kind of stuff.
You do. And, you know, like... I can definitely see, and I'm glad that I know it now. This is definitely a piece of rock history that I was a little bit unfamiliar. I really only knew Pour Some Sugar. I mean, now like I can say that genuinely. I did.
Yeah, like the kind of band that has done their Vegas residencies and stuff. Like up with the Britney Spears Bombast when they need to.
Yeah, they can be.
And of course, a lot of like pole dancers and exotic dancers and stuff. I've brought Pour Some Sugar to me too. Like. Mass audiences.
That is a strip club classic.
Oh, truly. Like, without a doubt, that was what helped, I'm sure, at the time, because it's sexy. It just is, naturally. Yeah.
Just before we close off, I'm just curious, did Def Leppard come from your parents, or what was the... How did you initially...
I don't know. I think I just liked 80s rock, and this just came on board... gradually through osmosis of loving that genre.
Okay.
You know, you discover it and you realize why it is the classic it is.
Yeah.
Magically. It's got a magic.
Maybe I'll have to bring in one of my all time faves next time just to even the score.
Fuck it. That's what we're for. This is where I come from musically. Yeah. So
definitely. No, listen, man, it's a piece of history. It is what it is. Like, I just, it's not in a genre that I particularly love, but I you have to put your, you know, hold your hands up and say this is exceptionally well produced as far as these type of songs go.
Stupidly well.
Like, it's as good as it is, nearly as good as it gets. Yeah, especially
there should
be
no reason somebody should push themselves this far to do these many layers of vocals.
For sure. I did find it funny that they apparently apologized to their fans for the wait and said they would never have to wait so long again for an album, and then proceeded to have like a 5-year gap afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, there were reasons, obviously, losing Steve. Yeah. But
No, I know.
I know.
But life just gets in the way, you know, it does. It does. So, you know, you can never, if you make a promise, you're bound to break a promise. But yeah, no, this is Hysteria by Def Leppard. Thank you for bringing it in.
You're welcome.
It's, you know, I now, next time I walk into a Fibbers or whatever, I'll be like, hey, it's, you know, it's
I understand that reference.
Yeah, I get it. I get it now.
Take sugar?
Do you pour it on me?
One lump or two? Okay.
Yeah. Just give me a little bit of a break before we do, like, I don't know, Kiss or something like that. But
I'm not really a Kiss fan.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something about this band that did it for me more than most that you'd probably assume.
Yeah. And it has that thing of like the English beating the Americans at their own game.
And kind of the Irish as well. Bit of Irish in there too, right?
Yeah.
They love their Irish, which is good. That's nice to have.
Yeah. Like similarly, here. I'm not really comparing Def Leppard to the Beatles, but similarly, like, you know, you've got that kind of Irish heritage, and they just kind of come in and again beat the Americans at their own game.
Yeah, like that song Animal, written across the road from me. I'm obviously going to be a little admirable of that.
even in that bit in the middle eighth where it gets a little bawdy.
Yes, I know the part. But anyway,
it was the 80s. It was the 80s. There was a lot of cocaine going around.
Oh yeah, and many women under revolving circle stages. Just the 80s. I don't know.
It was the 80s. You know,
I can't apologize for the 80s when I wasn't even in fetal mode.
A lot of leeway. Yeah, it was before our time. But that was great. Yeah, so that's Hysteria by Def Leppard. I've already kind of, but my favorite track is probably Run Riot. So.
Hell yeah.
By the sound of things, is maybe Animal?
Okay. Sorry to wind this out a bit. I would say there are certain... I would say... Oh, fuck, dude. It changes every day. I think it's Woman.
Oh, women. That's, yeah, women. That's, yeah, yeah. Women!
Yeah. As the men, vocal showcase, yeah. I'm in love. I'm in love with it. Yeah.
That's got the wind tunnel reversed kick in the middle. That kind of...
So cool. So cool. Yeah. I want more people to do that.
I know. I think Trivium did it, but very badly on the anthem. Mm. It can be done better, as Def Leppard have shown. All right, listen, thank you so much for joining us for this, our 100th episode. It's been a pleasure as always, Dylan.
It has.
You can follow the show on Spotify, Twitter, Facebook, all those good places. In anticipation for our 4th birthday, holy moly, time is flying. But yes, thank you so much for joining us. It's always good to talk about music, and we will be back very soon for more of that. There's more releases than I can shake a stick at, actually.
There's so many out yesterday. Yeah. I was kind of scared of our next.
We will have our work cut out for us next time. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dil. Talk to you soon.
Catch you later.
Bye-bye.